Welcome to the Sinister Sisters podcast. I'm Felicia.
I'm Lauren.
We're best friends.
And we like spooky stuff.
I watched a spooky movie today, actually.
What? What'd you
Can you believe it? I feel like I never watch movies anymore.
I'm so impressed.
I super randomly decided to turn on Killing of a Sacred Deer.
Oh, yeah.
Because Barry... Right? That's his name?
Yep.
Barry Saltburn. Isn't it? And I was like, why did I never watch this? So this is like a movie that I wanted to see years ago when it came out. And that movie is so unsettling. Like the sound design, the way it's shot is just incredibly unsettling. But I really liked it. It was so fucked up. It was great.
It's super unsettling. It's the same director as Poor Things, by the way.
That's hilarious. That's hilarious. I didn't realize that.
Yeah. They're very different movies. And like a lot of, I don't know, because he also did The Lobster and The Favorite.
Oh, The Favorite.
Did you see it? Yeah. With Emma Stone.
Never saw it. But never saw it. It was great.
Heard it was. You should actually watch that though. That's like a great movie.
Yeah. Yeah. I should.
You would also just, it's like three women, like for most of the movie. It's so great.
Oh, nice. But yeah, I watched that today, and I really enjoyed it.
Happy Sunday morning.
Yeah, that's so true. I was like, good morning, a little coffee and a little bit of murder.
And that's like, yeah, that is a very unsettling one. But I love it. Have you seen anything else? Shall I jump?
Not really. Not that I can think of, honestly.
I know. I don't know that I have like a really good horror movie recommendation, sadly. We watched Good Grief, the Dan Levy Netflix one. I liked it. I did not love it. I felt like it was a little too I don't know if like preachy is the right word. It was just like a lot of dialogue and not a lot happened. It's kind of like obviously like it's about exploring grief and it was sad, definitely, but like not, I don't know. It felt like one of those things where you're like, oh, I feel like I'm going to watch this and be like really feel connected and sad and like have a good cry. And I think I was just kind of like, oh, this is like someone else's experience. Do you know what I mean?
Yeah.
Not in a bad way. No, not in a bad way. Just like not super relatable to me. I didn't love the characters. Like most of the characters, I was like, I don't know. You guys are kind of all annoying. But
yeah. For sure.
But I'm proud of him. Like, I'll always love Dan Levy. So I'm like, you know what? Too. Good for you writing a movie. And I don't think he directed it, but he definitely wrote it.
Yeah.
And is starring in it.
Oh, I did watch something, but this was last weekend.
What'd you watch?
I watched Natalia Speaks.
Oh, my God. Just before we got on this.
Vince.
What
was it like? Weekend?
What's it like?
It was every moment was action-packed. Every moment was exactly what I wanted it to be. It was so thrilling.
Is it just her?
No.
Okay.
Definitely not. Season one is mostly the dad.
Whoa. Okay.
And he is so unwell.
Which we should give some backstory if people don't remember.
Oh, sorry.
This is the story that Felicia covered about the young woman who pretends to be a child, like what the orphan is based off of.
Right. But, I mean, it's weird to say spoiler when it's just someone's life. turns out they did a bunch of tests. Do you want me to spoil this for you?
Yes, it's fine.
Okay, if you want to watch Natalia Speaks and get the info for yourself, just skip ahead, whatever. She was a child. So they left her in that apartment at 9 years old. They legally changed her age to 22, but she was actually 9. And was left there by herself.
Oh my God.
Yeah.
That is the craziest shit I've ever heard. Excuse me, everyone.
And it's so crazy because when you're watching this thing, I don't think Natalia's, I think she does have problems for sure. But while you're watching it and you're watching everybody who's interviewed in this documentary, it just feels like they're all lying. I just feel like I'm watching all of them lie. But at the end, they do have a doctor perform these tests, I guess, And they were like, yes, this is what her actual age is. And she like confronts the dad about it and is like, why did you legally change? She's like, if they hadn't changed my age, everything would have been fine for me. But because they legally had my age changed, nothing was fine for me. And when she's asking him about it, that's like the one thing he won't talk about on camera. So he just is like, I refuse to talk about that. And she's like, I just want to know why. And he's like, I don't talk about that. And everybody's like blaming so much of it on the wife. But of course, the wife is the only one that like refused to be interviewed. So we never hear her side. But
and this is like the two parents that adopted her.
Yeah.
Right?
Oh my yes. God. And you hear from another couple that adopted Natalia before and had to give her back. And you get to hear from Natalia's biological mother in the Ukraine. It's so insane, Lauren. You have to watch it. You have to watch it. It's so crazy.
Oh my God. I think I have to watch it the second we get off.
I watched season one in one day and season two the next day. Like, I did not leave the couch. I could not look away.
How could you? How could you leave the couch?
I couldn't. It was so insane. So highly recommend Natalia Speaks.
That is so crazy. Oh, man. Okay. Yeah. I will definitely check that out. What I will say don't check out is Mean Girls, the musical movie.
Oh, that's so sad. Poor Renee. Poor Renee Rapp.
You know, happened?
What's wrong with it?
I don't want to say – I was just going to say I love – obviously, it's some of my past coworkers cast it. So, like, you know, so many props to them. I cannot imagine that task. But it is like they tried – it's like as if they were trying to, like – Gen Z-ify everything.
No.
But it's like done by like Regina's mom. Like it's like the style, like we just kept the costumes are truly awful. Like if the costume designer of the musical heard this on the podcast, I would still feel comfortable saying they were really bad costumes.
Yeah. I heard it was very like what's the cheap brand? Oh, Sheen. It looked very yes. Sheen.
But like I feel so bad for like, I don't know. I really like the main girl, like that actress and other things. What's her name? It's like Angelise Rice, something like that. She's like a little cute blonde girl. I'm sure you've seen her.
Australian girl? I think she's Australian.
Yeah. I'm sure you've seen her in things. Like, she's very sweet, but it's like there's like no arc. Like, it's literally like there's a shot of her in like, you know, conservative clothes or you know normal like her like weird coming from Africa clothes, and then the next shot is her like in a skirt that barely covers her butt and you're like what, she's just mean now? And like I don't know, the music is all fine, it's all fine, but it's like the main girl can also just not sing, so it's hard. Aaron Samuels is like just not for me, just sort of boring and not cute and also doesn't sing.
Who directed it?
It's like music video directors. It's like one of those.
Jeez Louise, people.
Did you see it on Broadway ever?
Yes. Oh my God, sorry.
No, you're fine.
For a second. Yes, I did see it. I thought it was fine.
Yeah, like it was a good time.
It blew me away, but I could understand that if I was younger, I probably would have been like really, really into it. But I thought it was generally fine.
Yeah, like it's fine. It's
got a couple good songs.
Exactly.
A couple wow moments.
And like for me, one of my favorites is that, I mean, it's still not like the best written song, but the song that Janice sings at the end that's like, I'd rather be me. Like it's great. But like the way that they staged it in the musical was like very like, you know, I think she was pretty much standing there just singing until the end.
It was Barrett, so she has to just stand there and sing.
That's all I want, though. I think I was just so, like, it just felt like it was, like, her singing her truth. And this one, it's, like, a music video. So she's, like, dancing all through the school and, like, whatever. And I was like, I feel nothing. I feel empty. Terrible. I was so angry. I made James come home and watch clips from the musical.
It's so funny because I am a huge musical lover. I teach musical theater, and I saw this TikTok that was just like, why does everyone keep trying to make movies musicals like, please stop. And I was like, I agree. Please stop. Like, it's not working. It's not working.
It is, like, truly not working. And it's one thing if you want to do West Side Story and you want to have Steven Spielberg direct it. Sure.
But what's this, like, with musical first? It's fine.
Yes. I'm like, different. We do not need Mean Girls the movie, then turn into a musical, then turn into a movie musical.
We didn't need it. You know?
And also, like, that first movie is
I guess that's,
perfect.
Like, Hairspray, too. Yeah, it's too perfect. It's, like, so, and that's what's, like, people are so money hungry, but it's, like, sometimes things achieve such cult status that they shouldn't be attempted to be competed with. It's not worth it because you're never going to reach that level of nostalgia and love for the original. So it's like you're actually just wasting your money.
And the concept that some people's first experience of Mean Girls will be that viewing.
It's a tragedy.
I'm like, Rachel McAdams should have been nominated for an Oscar. I will die on that hill.
Oh, yeah, for sure.
That performance.
Is she in this?
No.
No.
Lindsay is, as a cameo, okay. Spoiler. But
okay. All right.
That's it.
Interesting.
Anyway, that's it. I know. I mean, I feel bad saying don't go see it. I mean, I don't know. I kind of want to hear what you think now.
I don't know if I'll see it. Because I still want to see Iron Claw. I want to see Poor Things.
Yeah, wait. You and Travis have to go see Iron Claw.
He almost doesn't want to because he's such a wrestling fan. And he's like, it's such a sad story. And he knows the story very well. Because he's such a fan of the industry and those people and everything. And, oh, what's the other thing? Oh, I finally watched the trailer you tagged me in of the, what's it called?
Abigail. Are you excited?
I finally watched the trailer. Yes, it looks amazing. I got so sad, though. That actor that died is in it.
It's very sad.
Euphoria.
I know.
That was sad.
And, like, I do.
Was that his last thing he did?
I was just going to say that.
I don't know. It's just very sad. But,
oh, yeah. Final on-screen appearance. Oh,
wow. So dark. And I loved, oh, my God. I loved him. I thought he was so talented in Euphoria. Like, the moment he came on screen, I was like, who is that? Like, he is, like, because he's so not an actor. Like, he just is, like, so special. Okay. Should we find a way to bring this back to something less sad? I don't know what to do now.
I know. I mean, I guess, I mean, are you, I'm excited for that movie and we'll talk about it obviously when it comes out. It's Abigail. It's the Ready or Not team.
Yep. Ready. Yeah. And it's like a ballerina of vampire house of something. It almost has like a Saw feel too in a way because they're all like trapped in there.
Totally.
Yeah, it seems exciting. Looks like a good time
for sure. All right, do you want to jump into wouldn't that be a nice episode?
I thought that was it. So I'm actually going back to Latin America again this week.
I love it.
Yay for me. So today I'm talking about a supernatural woman creature, something that is seen in a lot of Central American folklore called the Ciguanaba. La Ciguanaba. It's got some names, different names, depending on the country. That's the main one I have found. Also see Juan Naba, depending on your, which country you're from. Singua is another term that's like what they call it in Costa Rica. But I kind of really love this one because it's kind of a version of a story we've heard a million times. But then it's just slightly stranger, which I like. So
I like it.
So this is the La Ciguanaba is a beautiful woman. Beautiful woman. She has long black hair. She is typically seen wearing just butt naked, or in like a very sheer white dress that you can just completely see through. And she's typically seen, yeah, it's amazing. She's typically seen by men, lone men that are walking out alone at night near water, so near rivers or lakes or whatever. And sometimes she's seen and she's like brushing her long, beautiful hair. Sometimes she's seen washing clothing, but she tempts these men. She brings them like closer to her and like basically gets them lost, and she seduces them. And at the very last moment before, I don't know, they're about to like kiss or they're like, she's got him where she wants him, that kind of moment. She reveals her true form, which her face transforms into a horrifying horse.
What?
Just her face. So her body stays the same. Just her
sexy
face.
Sexy body, horse head.
Yes. There's some great fan art, let me tell you. And
sort of a reverse centaur.
Actually, yes. That's funny. It is a reverse centaur. And typically the man immediately just dies from fear.
I mean, makes sense.
I understand. Sometimes he is driven mad by it and he'll just like become insane. And yeah, and so kind of the idea here is this woman that punishes men who are going to cheat on their wives. It's kind of the overall message to this story.
There actually is a strong theme between ours today. Anyway, go ahead.
Oh, perfect. Cheating men.
Yeah, men being awful and women getting their due.
I love it. I love it. Okay, so the word itself, because I was trying to use, like, I just tried to Google Translate it to see, like, what it translates to, and it didn't really translate to anything. So I was like, what does this mean? And so on the Wikipedia, it says that what part of the word, it basically is broken down into two elements. One half of the word means woman, and the other half means net, N-E-T. And so the idea of it's a net woman that can capture men by her, like, by how beautiful she is, basically.
I love it.
Which I thought was kind of nice.
Yeah, kind of like siren mermaid vibes. Yeah, sure.
So most of the stuff I found online, on YouTube, etc., were either from or the most like detailed versions were the El Salvador version and the Guatemalan version. So from El Salvador, the story is that La Singuanaba, before she became La Singuanaba, she was actually just a peasant woman named Sihuahet. I don't know. I don't know. Hard to say.
That sounded good to me.
Thank you. But she was a witch that was basically like became queen because she lured this man into marrying her who was a prince. And wow. I think this is like sort of like Aztec inspired story as well. But so she marries him and then he has to go off to war, and while he's gone she has sexy time with a lot of other men in the village.
Nice.
And she ends up getting pregnant the little boy named Cipitio. Not sure which one it, I'm not sure where that emphasis is. But, and this character is also a well-known character from Salvadorian folklore. He's seen, and there's images of this as well, but he basically has kind of like the like circular hat on. He's 8 to 10 years old and he has like a little pot belly. And so the husband gets back, the child and her are cursed. Sihuahet is cursed because not only has she had affairs, but she also was apparently a bad mother. So she would leave Cipitio at home while she went out to meet her lovers. And she would leave him home alone. So
not great. Not great.
So in the Salvadorian legend, she is going to, her husband, you know, he comes back and she's decided that she's going to kill him and then marry one of her lovers, that he will then become king and she'll stay the queen. And then when she uses this potion to poison her husband, he turns into this like giant scary monster and kills all these people. And then when the husband's father finds out what's happened, he basically calls to God. I don't know what God, I guess, unclear, not sure. And says, we need to curse Sihuet. And she would then forever be Siguan Naba. And the curse would be that she would be beautiful at first sight, just as she always has been. And then she would turn into a horrible monster. And she was forced to wander the countryside, appearing to men who traveled alone. And then Sipitio was also cursed to remain a little boy for eternity.
Wow.
Yes. Brutal. So brutal, brutal.
I feel fair that he gets looped into this.
I know. What did he do? He's just a little kid with a little belly. but I don't know. I don't know. And then, yeah, the Guatemalan version doesn't have as detailed of a backstory, but basically it's just the same deal where she goes to lustful men. And there was a version of it I saw on YouTube too, where it's not always by water. Like sometimes she like appears to men like in a bar as a beautiful woman, and then she's like, oh, let's walk home together. Oh, like I know you have a wife, but what does it matter? Look at me, I'm so beautiful. And like as soon as they give in to her temptation, she turns into a horse and scares them to death. But
I just love the horse. The turning into a horse is just so good.
It's funny. I found on this some random website, the Post Calvin. I don't even know what this is. But there's a link to a song called La Singuanaba by Sarah Karuchich, I think. And she's a Guatemalan singer-songwriter.
That's hard.
Yeah, it's a tricky one. And she sings, and this isn't translated into English, but it says, they call her a Singuanaba. They call her a witch. They call her an animal because she fights against the violence of a patriarchal system. And I said, oh. So in this version that this other, I guess in this version of the tale that she's telling in the song, she talks about this woman that was forced to marry an older man. The older man thought women should be dominated and were just a sex object, and she had to flee. And that like reinterpretation of the story of like who's actually the monster, is it her or is it the man, is interesting. But once again, I think it just depends on, and I even saw this last week with my dad's story, not only what country you're from, but also just what family you're from, because all these stories have been told a million different ways by different families over time. But yeah, but it's a interesting one. Just the imagery was really striking to me. And of course it reminded me of like La Llorona, or like this idea of a woman wandering the countryside killing people because she is cursed.
Yeah.
But yeah, that's it. That's
I love it. And that is And then it's like such a good twist on it with the horse head.
Yeah.
Amazing. All right. Well, kind of sticking to our, female monsters or are they not the monster sort of theme.
Mm-hmm.
I'm covering Giulia Tofana, who is kind of like a badass Italian woman in the 1600s, who basically just helped a lot of women poison their husbands.
Ooh.
Yes. So, in 1600s Italy, obviously we pretty much all know this because it's our history, it's world history. It's not specific to Italy necessarily, but in 1600s Italy, women were often mistreated and suffered abuse at the hands of their husbands. They obviously didn't really have any power on their own. Similar to other cultures, it's like they had to either get married or, you know, become sex workers or become nuns. Just not a lot of options. And mm-hmm. so a lot of people, you know, realized that maybe being a widow was the best outcome.
Okay.
So Giulia Tofana would be who they would go to help them get rid of their husbands. So she was born probably around 1610 in Palermo, Italy. And her mother was actually the infamous Tofania D'Amato, who was executed for murdering her own husband in 1633. So it's been rumored that like her mom passed down this poison recipe, this, you know, really good poison recipe. But regardless of whether it was her mom's recipe or not, she was, you know, very skilled in making all kinds of poisons. She spent a lot of time in apothecaries or like, you know, following, I guess it's like, what's the term for what, like apothecarian, right? Like training like with them kind of.
Oh.
Yeah. Like basically like, you know, what we kind of now think of as like pharmacists, people that were like, healers, medicine people. So she learned all kinds of, you know, learned all about different kinds of medicines and poisons. She did move around throughout her life. So she moved from Sicily to Naples to Rome, continuing to kind of have this, you know, under the table business. So basically she would, working with her daughter, she also had a group of trusted associates. Some like legends or like some pieces of information I found had that she worked with a priest, which is kind of crazy too. But she put up this front that she was selling powders and liquids that were cosmetics. So they were, you know, she was selling things that would supposedly enhance a woman's beauty, but it was really just selling poison. So
amazing.
It's really so good. So her best-selling product was called Acqua Tofana, and it was supposedly a popular face cream, or like I think it's kind of in between cream and oil basically, and it was supposed to preserve your youth. So it would come in a bottle or a case often labeled as Manna of St. Nicholas of Bari, which was a popular like ointment for blemishes, and it was made of lead, arsenic, and belladonna. And had some of the ingredients of like real cosmetics at the time. But the poison piece was colorless, tasteless. Husbands like obviously had no idea what their wives were bringing home. They would literally like leave the poison on their nightstand because it looked like face cream or whatever else.
Wow.
It honestly was like a really good business. But in reality, it killed people very discreetly. So the first dose, which the women would normally dilute with some kind of liquid, would just cause their husband to start feeling tired and weak. Mm. So it was a great system because it started out small. And then the second dose would start stronger symptoms like stomach aches, vomiting, dysentery.
Mm.
Then the third or fourth dose would normally kill them. So the poison and how it was administered just like truly stumped doctors, investigators who just thought it was like some kind of unknown illness or disease. I think she was very careful with, you know, giving it out. And it was a slower process. So what the good part for the women would be is as their man started to feel like more tired or more exhausted, they could start getting their affairs in order so they could make sure all the money was being left to them. They can make sure, you know, knew where all the money was. So it was a good system. And so the deaths were really not thought to be suspicious. The poison was pretty much undetectable. She moved around enough. And it seems like, you know, basically it was just like the word spread from woman to woman. And so her business was very successful. She was careful to vet everybody. I started kind of talking about this, but, you know, she either would get to know them first or, you know, one woman would talk to another woman and then would come back to her and say like, she's good. You know, you can sell to her. But unfortunately, things started to go south when one woman got cold feet. So this woman mixed a few drops of the liquid into her husband's soup. Then she freaked out, begged him not to eat it.
Ah, oh, come on, girl. Way to ruin it for everybody.
Exactly. I'm like, couldn't you just have knocked the soup out of his hand and said, our potatoes went bad?
Whoopsie daisy.
So sorry. There was actually a rotten egg in there. Let me quick grab that. But so this eventually led to, you know, the reveal of all these criminal activities. So the husband made the wife give up Tofana, or Julia is her first name, and the rest of her network of poisoners. The police got involved. But I will say, Julia was, you know, very beloved by the women she had helped.
Mm-hmm.
So, and honestly, like, that's the other kind of cool part about her story, is it was like rich women, poor women, like, you know, people in the countryside, people in the cities, like, all united in having horrible husbands and trying to kill them. So she got word that the authorities were coming. She fled, and she was actually granted sanctuary by a local church, which is, I still think, like, the best part of that time in our culture. I always think of Hunchback of Notre Dame. Do you remember that in the Disney movie?
Which part? I haven't seen that. She,
like, Esmeralda, like, walks into the church and is like, sanctuary! And then it's like, you just can't kill them as long as they stay in the church. Like, you can't come capture them. So she hung out in the church for a bit until, like, there started to be, like, a bigger rumor that she had poisoned the city's water supply. And so then I guess because it was such a big crime that they had to investigate, the government took action. They apprehended her. And unfortunately, as so many of these stories go, they subjected her to torture.
No.
So under torture, she confessed to, you know, killing or helping to kill over 600 men.
600. That's a big business, girl.
So I'm like, that's honestly impressive if that's true. So it was from 1633 to 1651, and that number was in Rome alone, she said.
Whoa, that's crazy.
So the number obviously could be higher or lower, you know, than that, because we know she was being tortured and she just confessed under, you know, that stress. It's believed, again, like, the facts are not as clear on this, but it's believed that she was executed in Campo di Fiori in Rome in 1659, along with her daughter and some of her other accomplices, which is super sad. But dozens of lower class women were also executed after they were found out to be her customers. And many of the upper class women were just imprisoned or banished for their involvement. So, as always, lower class women got the worst end of it.
Absolutely.
But she's still talked about, she's still famous today. And, you know, especially, like, if you, I did look on, like, TikTok and YouTube, and, you know, you could definitely do more research, find out more about her there. She's kind of, you know, like, a little bit of a legend, but she is a true woman. You know, it is factual that these things happened. Her poisons influenced, actually, the affair of the poisons in 17th century France that was around this woman named Catherine de Chaz Monvoisin, maybe, who was a fortune teller and poisoner, and she actually helped in the attempted murder of King Louis, the, ooh, Roman numerals are hard, 14th?
Sounds possible.
King Louis the 14th. So, you know, her poison, you know, we see so many women who have poisoned their husbands. Or, like, it's such a stereotype, I feel like, that it's, like, the, like, women's weapon, right? Isn't there?
Oh, yeah, for sure. Like,
people always say that that's, like, what women do. But on his deathbed, this is a crazy, like, possibly not true little tidbit. On his deathbed, Wolfgang Amadeus Mozart allegedly blamed his sudden mysterious illness on Julia's poison. And supposedly his last words were, I am sure that I have been poisoned. I cannot rid myself of this idea. Someone has given me Aqua Tofana and calculated the precise time of my death. So not proven, but I like that idea that it was like so much in the, you know.
Oh, wow. He died at 35. That is like young, right? I mean, maybe not young at that time, but still feels probably young.
But like for Mozart, I feel like, you know, like a big whatever, somebody who had a lot of money and fame.
Yeah.
Still pretty young. Interesting. And possibly poisoned and possibly, you know, with one of her her poisons. If you look up this, I'm like, what is the cause of his death? It does say an illness.
Yeah, it doesn't say the specified. But also, have you ever noticed, like, pictures of people from whatever, let's see, he lived in the 1700s. Like, he looks like he's 6 years old. The white wig thing, he died at 35. Yeah. Why does he look 60 years old in this picture? That's very confusing for future generations in history class.
It is very confusing. Yeah. The white wigs are really misleading, I'll say.
Yeah.
And also, like, how weird that they wanted to appear
older.
Very old.
Yeah, what is that? The powdered wig.
Now we're like, please inject things into my face so that I look younger.
Yeah, I liked that random gray hair trend that was around for a second. I don't know if you remember that. I kind of liked that. That
honestly,
was cool.
I was just going to say, I keep thinking about it, but I don't know. I'm going to do a crazy color after my wedding. Anyway.
You are? Oh, excited.
Yeah. I think I am. But anyway, the last thing I'll say is there is a novel that's called The Poison Keeper. That was written by Deborah Swift. That's based on her life. So if you're like, what a cool story, I want to read, like, it's kind of like historical fiction based on it. And then there's even a sequel that's called The Silkworm Keeper. I'm still about Julia Tofana. So definitely check those out if you think she's cool. I thought it was such a cool story. And obviously, like, this like secret network of women poisoning their abusive husbands.
Yeah.
It's just wild. So cool.
That is wild. We don't condone poisoning. But it was interesting. But we do like to hear stories about it. Can't help it. Can't help it.
Yes. Do I think you should poison your husband? No.
No. But what's that tweet that I'm obsessed with? That tweet that's like, straight women are the only ones that are forced to marry their only predator, or something like that. Isn't like
that's
crazy.
True though. That's true though.
Like, I was going to say only species, but I couldn't think of, like, the actual quote. Because it was, like, animals, et cetera, et cetera. It's like, no one has to do that except for straight women, which is this.
Straight women. The people crazy. That kill us the most are husbands.
Yeah. It's true. That's just true. It's terrible, but it's true.
It's really awful.
But, yeah. All right. Well, that was heartwarming. Cool. Yeah.
Every day, every week, we just bring you heartwarming stories.
Yeah, of love and joy and health and community. And
should we start an alternate podcast that we record, you know, every other week that's just like happy?
The Silly Sisters.
maybe that's what we'll be when we're like moms or something.
Yeah, maybe. But yeah, thank you all so much for listening. We hope you have
some sweet, sweet nightmares.
Bye.